Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. It is really a great honor today to have one of my favorite radio show hosts on as a guest. With us today is Henrik Pohlgren of Red Ice Creations, including Red Ice Radio, which I must tell you, pound for pound, is one of the most valuable, useful sources of information about what in the world's really going on. I think at one point the tagline was something like mapping or exploring the uncertainty. And needless to say, the uncertainty rises every day. So, Henrik, welcome to the Solari Report, and thank you for taking time off as a host of your own show to join us on the Solari Report.
Oh, it's great to be here, Catherine. Thank you so much for those kind words. It's always fun to be on the other side of the mic, as it were. So thanks for having me.
Well, there was a group gathered who's going to do a conference this June in San Mateo, California, Secret Space Program. And as we contemplated who would be the best host on the planet to host our conference, we came up with you. And when you said yes, we were very excited. So you and I are going to talk today about that program, why we're doing it, and why we think it's so important. So, but first, let me just say we're thrilled that you're going to be the host. So for anybody who needs to know, Secret Space Program is Secret Space Program. .org is the conference website, and Henrik is going to be our host and moderator for the program.
Excellent, great. Yeah, I hope it will be a good one as well this year. We were in Amsterdam, Catherine, in 2011 when the organizers put it on there, and it was, you know, really exciting and good stuff we got to there. So I hope we'll do the same this year.
Now, were you the host for that program?
No, I was just there as a guest at that point. Actually, we shot a TV show from there. We got on some of the speakers and talked with some of the audience. We had a little bit of a different idea there. You know, Jay Rowan wanted to drag me and get me involved in some of the Q&A sections and everything, but that didn't pan out. But no, I was just there as a guest and helped them.
You were there as a guest, okay?
Yeah.
So now you get to be on the other side. Well, let's step back and start with Red Ice Creations. How did you come to start Red Ice Creations, and tell us about the beginnings and how it's evolved over the years?
Certainly, yeah. It's I guess it's kind of a long story, but there's certainly ways we can just shorten that down. I started it back in 2001, 2002, basically just as a repository with some of the most interesting articles and research and everything else I could find online. It's like, 2001, but still kind of early days internet concern when it's really starting to take off. I mean, even back then, there wasn't even a third, a quarter of all the information that's out there today online. So it's just a kind of a new period getting into all the research and all the excellent material that was available to you at that point. And I just wanted to have somewhere where I kind of saved it, I guess, to a certain extent. And then it wasn't until 2006 that we added the radio show portion to the website as well, which has become very popular. We have listeners all over the world. I think we have had hits from every single country in the world, although some of them are a little bit less, of course. But it's still it's spread far and wide online, which is really encouraging, because we never, intended it to be what it is today. Really, this is just my own interest in these topics that was, driving me at that stage. I just wanted to, well, I still do. I just still want to know, right? That's the main driving, motivating force behind all of it.
Right. You always had this feeling about you guys. You were just say, I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, now have you gotten to the bottom of it?
Not at all. No, far from it. The more you find out. Not in every single case, though. That would be unfair to say that. But the more you question, the more you research, the more you try to piece things together, you realize how little you really know. And as every year, every month, and every day really goes by as well, and it feels like you can, kind of accumulate the information. You can process it in a different way. You come to understand it in a different way. And more of what you learned in the past makes sense. Some things, of course, kind of fall off, and you do sharpen your quest a little bit, I guess. You do sharpen the areas would, that you feel are the most important and whatnot. But at the same time, I mean, there's just so many unknowns out there and so many mysteries. And
right.
The more we ask, the more we realize that there is to find out about it. And to a certain extent, that can be kind of frustrating. But at the same time, it means that it's an eternal quest, right, for knowledge. I mean, this is what the philosophers throughout the millennia have been involved in, of really finding out what are we doing here? What is it all about? You know, the deeper, the bigger questions.
Right. Well, it's certainly, I forget, what was that tagline on your site? I loved it so much. Something about mapping uncertainty or managing the uncertainty.
We have one right now, which is navigating the ocean of uncertainty. Maybe that's
it. That's it. Navigating the ocean of uncertainty. I thought that was a great way of describing it. Well, tell me, I think that one of the reasons we're all gathering in San Mateo for the Secret Space Program Conference is because the issues of the Secret Space Program and its financing and all the different ramifications of that are critical to understanding sort of how things are working on planet Earth, what the real governance system is. So I think it's right at the heart of really, you know, trying to distill that uncertainty down to a framework within which we can explore and ask questions. But you tell me from your standpoint, why did you want to be involved and how does this fit in with your search for the truth?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just out of the gates here. I'm certainly not an expert in any capacity on this particular topic, if I am on any topic really, but I've always been interested in what's at the pinnacle of all the efforts of the elite, for the lack of a better term. What is at the apex of that pyramid of all the conspiracies and the corruption and the money laundering, the aspect of trying to control humanity, to put in a control grid, create a prison planet. You know, we all know what's going on at this stage, but what are they really doing that for? What are the reasons beyond just the basic premise of, you know, controlling people and having an upper hand when it comes to where we're going to develop in the future? So my question has always been, is there something else going on which we are not privy to, something which is far beyond what people expect that it is? I mean, it's at this stage, I think it's fairly safe to say that it's definitely not all about the money. Some of these people have, you know, managed to, as you've proven, Catherine, you know, take away more money from this through all their schemes and everything else than what one could spend in a million years, right? And they print the money for all, you know, from what we can understand
right.
From the economic system, you know. So it's like, that's not it. There's something else going on. So what is at the top of that? What is the most important? Is it to get off world? Is it to create an Earth 2.0? What are the measures and length that they are willing to go to get off this place? You know, there's so many angles here and so many, of course, possibilities still. But I think that this particular topic is one of the more interesting issues, a contender, if you will, for what's at the pinnacle of the pyramid, of what they're trying to achieve, why they're trying to do it. And again, if there's something threat-wise, which we discussed on when you were on Red Eyes, Catherine, most recently here,
right.
what is the threat level out there? Is there something that has initiated them to go to these lengths and go to these very kind of subversive measures, if you will, to get their goal achieved? So there's just, I mean, unfortunately, there are just so many more questions than we have answers right now. But nonetheless, I think it's definitely a contender to why they're doing what they're doing.
You know, it was very interesting. When I first started in 2005, I started to go on Coast to Coast Radio a great deal. And I had always resisted it because I felt everybody, you know, I was trying to interest people in communities and water and sewer systems and utilities and roads, community venture funds, and so many people just wanted to talk about space and aliens and UFOs. And I thought, you know, we all need to get grounded. Why can't I interest you in roads and bridges? And it took me a long time to realize, well, you know, the financial system is harvesting everyone, every person, every family, every household, every community, every business. And that harvesting is like a huge global tithe, and it's going someplace. And it seemed to me more and more that it was going in space, but even more important, if you look at a community I spent a period looking hard at the narcotics trafficking. What I discovered is if a group of soccer moms get together and try and, you know, back the drug dealing out of their neighborhood, what they discover is that, and this is an allusion to American TV, that Tony Soprano, who's running the local drug business, is backed up by James Bond. So if you back the drug dealers out of your neighborhood, you know, so if the mob gets backed out of your neighborhood, the next thing you know, you have James Bond coming down in your head. And there seemed to be a rule that no neighborhood could get out. And it turned out it was because it was so centralized. If one neighborhood could get out, then any neighborhood could get out. And one of the things I discovered is if you looked at who was enforcing that, you know, in the United States, it was the same company as was enforcing it around the world. You know, it was a global model. And there was a very direct link between what was happening on Main Street and what was happening, you know, in the greater geopolitics, because money, you know, money is connected, and it's, you know, when you squeeze down on one part of the toy, boom, it pops out on another. So it was almost kicking and screaming that I got dragged into looking at space. Because I said, well, wait a minute, you know, if every neighborhood is going to be harvested to finance something in space, you know, then I guess there's a connection. And so, you know, I've finally reached the point where I just feel like, you know, a little kid digging its heels in and saying, you know, I want to know what's going on here. What is this space thing all about?
Exactly. Well, Catherine, I think that you raise a good point as well, by the way, because I believe that the, you know, the lack of interest really that we see in the world now is actually connected with the topic in a different way as well, because while we have something like the secret space program going on, the breakaway civilizations that's trying to do something else somewhere else, either that's if that's on an actual planet in the, you know, Goldilocks zone somewhere, or if it's on a space station or whatever shape that takes, I think it's a key component is this idea that we also fight amongst ourselves while they're doing this as a way, you know, as the prison planet of control is being built around us. We see everything from the destruction of the economy to the destruction of countries, really, you know, the national identity is eroded, mass media is controlled, you have a you know, the economy is being, you know, stifled in that regard. You have different kind of models and propositions coming in that makes it more difficult for people, the red tape, the bureaucracy, and all these things. And it's almost like it's almost turning more tribal, if you will, on this level, where we fight amongst ourselves while they're busy doing their thing, right? So it's a diversion tactic, and I think that they do all interlock in some way of why we get the lousy services that we do from government. But it's also an important aspect, I think, that we shouldn't take out of the picture, because we think, okay, well, there's just a way too much of a bigger, important topic at hand, and we all need to focus on that. I think we need to focus on as many things that interlock as possible and try to figure out why we're in the predicament we are. Why are we in this situation? Why is it so difficult to steer politics in the direction that it is? Why are all these things happening with the destruction of the West at the same time? You know, free speech is going, conformity, you know, it's just, there's so many issues with this. And I think it's made to a certain extent to be difficult for us down here so that we lose sight of the goal of the prize. Exactly.
Right. Well, that's what I'm hoping. I have been hoping for quite a while that if you look at the people who are coming together in June, that there would be an opportunity for those people to come together and meet face to face. For the last 2 years, when I drive back from California to Tennessee once or twice a year, I stop and visit with Dr. Joseph Farrell in person. And I found just being in person, you know, it's as though we have more ahas. There are just many, many aha moments. And same, I was with Richard Dolan at the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Boulder last year. And what I was hoping is we could get all of these people to come together. And we've just had good news. John Rappaport will be there.
Oh, great.
So Richard and John and Joseph are three of my greatest, you know, suppliers of aha moments.
Yeah.
And the thought of having them in the same place all together. You know, who knows what could happen. But maybe as the host, you could walk us through the program.
Yeah, the actual the schedule you're thinking about?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have to. This one thing I have to get better at doing. You know, I have like I'm really getting into the whole layout of everything right now, and I'm uh-huh. fresh on it still, actually. So I hope that we can, you know, lay it out. But obviously, we can mention some of the speakers to begin with. We have you, Catherine, of course. We're going to have Carol Rose there via, I believe, via Skype, if I haven't missed.
Yeah, Carol's coming in by Skype.
That's right. And, of course, Joseph Farrell, Richard Doland, as you mentioned. We also have Michael Schratt and Robert Morningstar. And, yeah, great. John Rappaport is going to be there as well. He's also one of my favorites, of course. And, you know, as a host, of course, I just wish that I can facilitate you guys and do it in such a way that all the information comes out coherently and that we can pull it together, because I'm looking forward to the Q&A sections as well, you know, so actually get some.
Do you know yet how has it been finalized how much we're going to be doing in panels and in Q&A?
I have to look at that again. I'm not actually quite sure. I haven't really dug into the schedule yet, because I know it's changing a little bit all the time as well. But definitely at each end of every day, I think we're going to like try to kind of pull it together a little bit and kind of summarize what has been, you know, learned, and kind of look at the highlights, the big points, and hopefully those will be worthy of further examination. Because it just, as you said, when you kind of blend people and get them together, something happens, you know, you get a different flavor to things and different perspective as well. So I hope that something more can kind of be drawn out of that, because, I mean, again, this is a topic where there's so many unknown things. There's a couple of things that we do know, of course, that not only the financial trail, but we know about the, you know, X-37B, the craft that's, you know, coming and going, leaving space, acting as some kind of delivery vehicle to something up there. I mean, one of the missions that lasted for over 500 days, I believe? Something crazy like that. Yeah, it's been in space for over 500 days, and there's still no admission of what it is doing up there or where it's going or anything like that. So
right. There
are some real key notes as to, you know, what actually can be found out. And the question is, of course, is how do we open up the topic more? How do we actually go from uncertainty to certainty about what really is going on? Is this something that can be, you know, extracted through, you know, freedom of information? Is this something that just can be done through more and more people trying to get up into space with the private space industry? That's one thing I've always hoped for, Catherine, that what if there was something that comes along here as technology gets more and more easily accessible and more things can be pulled together? If you had some kind of crowd-funded space program or something like that, you know, you
right.
pull this together and actually try to achieve to getting up into space and doing this for ourselves, you know?
Well, I think the United States has clearly, you know, has moved to privatize the space program, or to certainly open things up to private space. And we see, you know, the private space companies, the numbers growing, and SpaceX, for example, doing more work for NASA on a sort of more entrepreneurial contract model than has traditionally been the case. So it seems to be moving in that direction. And just as you have the commercial interests wanting to move into space, we also see more sort of national sovereignty squabbling. I don't know if you just saw the recent announcement from the Russian deputy saying the Russians should create a permanent base on the moon. That coming right after NASA had canceled its agreement of cooperation with the Russians post the start of the Ukraine event. We also see the Chinese sending their first, you know, their first mission to the moon. So you can see the national sovereign competition is heating up. And what I would tell you, if you look at sort of what's been going on with the global currency, the critical issue on the reserve currency, or the evolution of it, is who controls both the satellite lanes and space weaponry to the extent that it exists. So I think there's a push to assert sort of weaponry control of space and turf in space on one hand, and a push by the commercial interests to go out into space. I know here in the United States, and you've been, how long have you been living in the States now?
Well, just to be clear on that, we're going back and forth a little bit. I'm based out of Sweden still, and this is something I've been going back to the U.S. a little bit, because my wife is American, and she, after a couple of years in Sweden, you know, she kind of was missing her home country a little bit. So I've been going back and forth a little bit. So I'll be definitely here during, you know, during June and the for the space program.
Uh-huh.
conference, you know, but then I'll probably go back again. So we'll see.
Come back to Sweden.
Not sure yet, actually.
So you should spend summer in the U.S. or winter in the U.S. and summer in Sweden.
Yeah, summer's better in Sweden.
So I just want to get back to the notion of space weaponry something you've covered on Red Ice Creations and Red Ice Radio?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think, again, of course, Farrell is the go-to guy, I think, for this topic as well.
Absolutely.
He's going to have to dig out, you know, because, but there's one thing I always wonder about, and that is the level of the cahoots, you know, between nations. If there is a top level cooperation, or if what we're experiencing is just a charade between the infighting between these different countries, because I believe that if we had an imminent threat, or if there even was building of something up in space, weaponry or something like that, I think that there would be definitely a top layer, a top tier that would be, you know, above the nation level that would definitely cooperate on these levels. And it might still just be the official space program that might still be concerned with, you know, the U.S. versus Russia or versus China kind of scenario. But I think if we transcend and go above that level to it, I think that there is a top level cooperation, which is completely done over most people's heads. I mean, the question is if even like Putin or Obama is even aware of this, which I doubt actually. They might not be in the loop of these things, because if they knew too much, they're way too public and they might reveal something about it or whatnot. But, I mean, the issue of weaponry is always really interesting, I think, because if so, it could be, we always come back to the kind of the question, okay, if they're building some kind of weaponry out there, is it aimed, you know, towards Earth, or is it away aimed away from Earth? Is the reasoning for the building out there, or is it more to, you know, keep us down here, to keep us locked in on this prison planet? You know what I mean?
One of the challenges of sort of framing the unanswered questions of space and then drilling down and trying to get the facts and evidence is you are immediately targeted with all sorts of disinformation and derision. You know, I'm a financial person, and in the financial world, you're just not allowed to talk about these topics, or you will be targeted and made a laughing stock of. And it gets very, you know, it takes a lot of energy to offset that. And I think one of the questions I've thought about in connection with this conference is how do we pull this topic out of that old dynamic of trying to talk about it and running into, you know, targeted disinformation and being made fun of? How do we just say, look, that's an old conversation. Let's, you know, this is too important. Let's put that behind.
Yeah, well, good question. I think it's always, you know, you just have to focus primarily on what it is that we need to find out and present as credible information, because I think you'll always have a level of ridicule. And if you end up, you know, kind of defending yourself against that, you're losing the plot a little bit. And I think that's the goal of them as well, to kind of derail you, that you're obsessed with trying to, you know, make it credible to other people. I mean, I think there's a way you can go about that with pointing to the things that we do actually know and trying to piece together the puzzle in that way. But at the same time, we have to be, you know, brave enough and just push forward and really try to reason with people and say, listen, you know, these things have been going on a smaller level for years. People can think of the Manhattan Project. You know, there's tons of these, you know, big scale projects that have been held secret for years and years, and nothing leaked out. It was possible. They did it. They pulled it off. And in this case, why wouldn't it be possible? We even have space flights, as I said, the robotic space flights of the X-37B that is coming and going. And I think there's satellite launches or some kind of launches from various, I mean, we have one up in northern Sweden as well, Spaceport or whatever the name is for it. And there's just an incredible amount of liftoffs. There's, I think NASA is monitoring that. There's a couple of online sites that show just how many things come and go and leave the atmosphere, you know, each year. And it's just a tremendous amount. I don't have the number on top of my head right now, but it was something I was shocked when I saw it. It was like, is it that many rockets and shuttles that go back and forth? Something's, you know, where is all this stuff? Is it just, you know, orbiting around the Earth, or is it going somewhere else? You know, so I think there's a lot of these main points that we can stress without necessarily going too far into the fringe areas of, you know, speculation per se, to get people to understand that this is a possibility, you know, and just kind of piecing together the puzzle in a coherent way. That's what I think we should do.
Well, you know, there's a massive amount of money involved, and that's how I finally came to it. Was first when I discovered that James Bond was protecting Tony Soprano, I said, okay, this is a conversation that can't be avoided. So, you know, even though I wanted to avoid it, I'm not going to, because it leads to the heart of the matter. And then I started studying the evidence, particularly the video evidence. And then I started to try and, you know, because I'm a money person, so everything to me, I've got to, you know, I've got to bring down to the mathematics of time and money. And that tool's useful to helping you understand a whole lot of phenomena on planet Earth. But when you talk about other dimensions or other worlds, you know, it kind of breaks down because it's an earthly tool. But nevertheless, you know, when you watch all that evidence of UFOs, what you realize is whether it's the Nazis who are managing it or owning it, or what you realize is, well, wait a minute. You know, we're talking about literally trillions of dollars of hardware flying around in the sky, which is clearly the superior technology. And one of the things I know on planet Earth is superior technology wins. So when it comes to money, you're talking about the guy who ultimately can enforce the investment. And if a huge amount of money is literally getting harvested out of the financial system and disappearing, there has to be a connection. Because the only person who can get that harvest is the one with the biggest guns. Yeah. So I finally said, look, I don't begin to understand this, but I know I've just got to start asking questions, and I've got to keep asking questions, because this is running the show. It's just running the show. It's just, you know, you can't have $100 trillion of hardware flying around in the sky and think it's not relevant to the economy. It's relevant to the economy, whether because, you know, they're running enforcement or somebody's having to build an industrial infrastructure to produce it. So
yeah,
somebody's right. Got, right.
Well,
you know, it's,
sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
One of the challenges that comes up when you talk about advanced technology that is not integrated into the infrastructure is it's a financial question. So if you just look at the pension funds and the stocks they hold, they have a great deal of money in a variety of interests. And if you introduce new technology, the number of people that lose their jobs and the equity, the destruction of that equity value may be much greater than the number of new jobs created or the new equity value created. So, you know, if you look at what a pension fund can lose on General Motors, it can be a lot more than they can make on Tesla Motors. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So these issues of transition and where you hold the, you know, I've found that the line of what new technology is allowed in and what's not is very politically managed. And one of the reasons is you get these, you know, very bizarre financial valuations that depend on that line not shifting. And if it shifts, you can get dramatic results. I mean, one of the things we're watching right now is utility stocks are way down because, you know, the growth of renewable energies is really causing enormous creative destruction in their business.
Right, right. Well, I think the question as well is if the technology developed is, if that is still something within the official realm. I mean, are these companies on the stock market, is this something which, you know, again, the development per se is something that you can get access to and see, or is all of this basically off budget? It's being developed in an industrial infrastructure which we, to a large extent, don't even know about. I mean, is it developed in the massive, you know, vast underground facilities that we have? Necessarily, we don't have to go there. We just know. I mean, we were in a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico here a while back, and it was just really interesting to see how much is being done even down there in Los Alamos and everything else, and these weird, crazy scientists that are given, you know, huge budgets to just experiment, to find whatever they need to find, to make advancements in, you know, understanding energy systems and, you know, plasma and everything else. And it's like, I think it's right there on the level of where the where the money is being poured into when it comes to research and development. But, you know, not to, you know, forget, though, that we do have a completely off-budget program running as well, the black budget and everything that goes into that kind of world. And the question is there then, of course, is it only with an insider and whistleblower that we can get closer to that? And I've been some, you know, by automatic, I think we should be reluctant and we should be skeptical when a whistleblower comes out and speaks up that they had, you know, seen this or done that or whatever. But at the same time, is it there that we need to look to try to figure out what else is going on? It's just been so very difficult to confirm that, because there seems to be a disconnect between the suggestions, let's say, that you know, you've proposed, or even Joseph Farrell, to some of the more extreme whistleblowers out there, shall we say, where it's a gap there. It seems it's not really connected.
Right.
It can be so radical and so, you know, off the wall. It doesn't mean that it's not true, of course, but it becomes difficult to kind of take that and absorb it into this model of what actually is going on. I don't know about you, Catherine, but I find that kind of difficult, and there's a disconnect there.
Right. Well, I remember when I first went public and started to explain to people about the mortgage fraud. No, I was warning people about mortgage fraud in 1999. And, you know, it literally took some people over 12 years, sophisticated financial people, to understand and face what I was saying. Because here's the problem. You have a database. And let's say I have an operating system and a computer and I have 50 different databases, and then someone brings me a database that requires me to change my operating system, you know, and the thought of migrating 50 new databases into a new operating system is just way too difficult. So I say, no, I don't want your database. You know, what I was bringing them with the mortgage fraud information was, you know, basically saying your entire paradigm of how the financial markets exist and work is wrong. And they just couldn't fathom it. They just couldn't fathom that what I was saying was true. You know, and so it took some period of time. And, of course, you know, events proved me right. And there you have it. But I agree with you. There's an awful lot of stuff that comes out. And that's why you need people to vet it. So, for example, on the UFO topic, I've never felt competent to really understand it or expertise it or present it. I have very little personal experience with, you know, just seeing the UFOs in the sky, but, you know, I don't have a lot of expert knowledge. And so I depend on people like Richard Dolan. You know, Richard to me is somebody who's gone in there and figured out as to a lot of stuff, what's information and what's disinformation. Because until Richard and some of his work came along, I would just, you know, I would dive in. And after the fifth book, I just throw my hands up and say, I give up. I have no idea. I'm just, you know, I can't sort it out. Oh, no. I mean, I used to just give it away. You know, I'd say, this is really important. I'd dive in. I'd read a whole bunch more books. And I'd just roll my eyes and say, I have no idea. And give up. And then it was a matter of finding people I could trust who had the time, the interest, and the intellectual rigor. That's why we just had Richard Dolan on the Solari Report and made the interview public to support the conference. I know you've had him on the Red Ice Radio, and his new book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, is just a new, fresh overview of the entire topic from soup to nuts, and, you know, written very well, written something anybody could pick up and read in a weekend and say, okay, you know, I now have a framework for this entire topic and how it relates to my life. And I think it's a great contribution, because we need to bring it down into your day-to-day existence and make it, you know, something that relates. And I'll tell you, one of the things I think that's going to do that, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bundy Ranch incident that's been happening out in Arizona.
Oh, that was amazing. I saw the footage last night, actually, and the way that they were basically pushing away the BLM officers there at the agency?
Right. It's the Bureau of Land Management. What you've been watching going on for many, many years is an effort by the federal government to confiscate or control land. And two of the drivers is they want more land to help own and consolidate real estate for farmland. So they're trying to build sort of what I call an agricultural juggernaut. And they're also trying to get as much land as possible for fracking. And right now you see the United States over in China and Europe, making all sorts of deals and promises to make sure they can get Chinese and European support in terms of Russia and the Ukraine. So that's a matter of delivering more oil and gas to Europe, and it's a matter of delivering more food and other natural resources to China. You know, at some point, everybody in the world says, look, we don't want more paper. We want hard assets.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. China wants Smithfield ham, not more treasuries. And so they need to come back to this country, and you see them essentially grabbing assets. Now, there's a huge, you know, play going on because, of course, the American people don't, you know, the ranchers want the land. And so now you're watching a real sort of war brewing between local rights and the sort of urgent geopolitical needs of the leaders. Now, if you're the local guys, you know, you can hear the leadership saying, well, you know, we need the land for this reason and this reason for geopolitics. But the local guys now have a right to say, well, wait a minute, you know, you just stole $40 trillion. Why don't you use the money you just stole? Why do you steal any more? And so, you know, the American people have never wanted to dive into all the money that's being stolen. You know, and I've always said, crime that pays is crime that stays. But now we're down to, you know, we're down to just all muscle. And so if ever there was a time to open up this conversation and say, wait a minute, you just stole $40 trillion. Where is it going? You got plenty of money for the space station. You know, how come, how come stealing our grazing rights or our land is the way to finance this? Let's talk about all the money you've stolen and where it's going and why, P.S., the money, you know, and technology that's going to these private corporations ends up being owned by them and not by us when we've paid for it. So to me, there's no way this sort of local global standoff, Bundy Ranch being a symptom or example of it, can continue unless you open up and look at all the money, including on the covert black budget side. So to me, Main Street has every reason in the world to want to be interested in sort of secret space program and breakaway civilization, because this is at the very heart of, you know, we're being drained to pay for it, but we're not getting the dividend.
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's where it really ends as well. I mean, I think even behind this scenario, the BLM agents and all that, I think it was the Waltons, the Walmart family, that actually are basically hiring these agents, you know, guns for hire mercenaries to do their bidding for them. There was a connection there. I heard about that. And this is, I mean, again, it's about making the playpen smaller, of course, but also just extracting all the assets and creating conflict on this kind of level where they just ask for more and more and more. At some point, this is where it ends. The state has monopoly on violence and they tell us whatever they do. But I think what's interesting, the way that they backed away, because if, I mean, the people there were ready to, you know, take bullets, it looked like, you know, and if they would have done.
Yeah, they were.
This would have just been blown. I mean, this would have been blown the whole lid wide open. And so they're afraid of doing that. They can't do that because they know that this will open that Pandora's box of what is really going on here. If they're ready to, you know, kill and murder people, shoot people on these kinds of bases, which is completely unfound. But then, you know, they do it under different measures as well. For example, the environmental issue. You have the, you know, land and protection, and EPA comes in and says that, you know, there's this rare, you know, water bug here in this area, and therefore we're just going to take the whole land and you have no right to develop it or do anything on it. So there's a number of different ways that they're doing this on, and people have to be real smart about, you know, how they're actually using us and how they're trying to take all these assets from people and private property and everything else.
Well, it's interesting. Today is April 14th and tomorrow is April 15th, tax day. So if they are going to be aggressive in a situation like Bundy Ranch, it's going to be on April 16th. Not on April 13th.
Yeah, good point.
Well, think about it. You know, I'll never forget one guy who proposed what we should all do is on April 15th, just say, you know something, we're all filing massive political protests. We're all filing extensions. We will all file our taxes on October, you know, in October, in the fall. And, you know, just as a way of saying, okay, we're coming together. I just interviewed, Charles Hugh Smith, who has a blog of Two Minds. I don't know if you've had him on Red Ice Radio. And he, uh, we, the conversation was about soft weapons, because I've always found that the thing which has kept the divide and conquer going is that the general population doesn't understand and have, you know, sort of hasn't built an immune system response to soft weapons. And, you know, I wonder if you've discussed that at all on Red Ice.
Yeah, you're talking about the acoustic, you know, taser, rubber bullets, that kind of technology, or is it something?
No, I mean, I mean, sort of targeting individuals, targeting them financially and legally, you know, targeting them with smear campaigns and whisper campaigns, using entrainment over phones, all the different invisible technology, including a lot we can do with telecommunications and smartphones and TVs and everything else.
Well,
so if you've ever seen Enemy of the State, if you ever seen the movie Enemy of the State?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I always tell people I played Will Smith in real life. So one day he's a prosperous attorney sitting in the middle of the Washington. The next, you know, day, everybody he knows won't speak to him, and they all think he's a serial killer. And it's all just a, you know, it's just a sham smear campaign. You know, so he got hit with a soft weapon attack, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Well, absolutely. I mean, I think we see this in various capacities all the time. We've spoken with some people from the U.S. about that before, about technology and you know, how they use that to terrorize people. But there's other ways of doing that too. I mean, we've focused on the issue of the economic depravity in the Scandinavian countries specifically, and how now this Nordic model and everything else is going to be, it's thought to be brought into the United States and spread around the world in different capacities. And therefore, we've looked at how, for example, the Swedish tax agency have been targeting certain people and accusations to, again, just kind of muscle funds from them and just basically destroy their businesses. And just this consorted effort to destroy people who are independent as well, to get them into, I mean, it's like they almost don't care if you go on welfare at the end of the day, just as long as you're not capable of running your own show and doing your own thing and being, you know, more independent and not dependent on the state or anything like that. And that's just a recurring theme that comes up over and over and over again, how people are, you know, abused and they're taken advantage of. In some cases, it goes further. They're experimented on with technology. They're experimented on in terms of psychology as well, which is, you know, really scary with the social engineering tactics and everything else they use, and destroy people in the media as well. I mean, that, I mean, there's no environment, I think, in the world that's so conformity-based and so rigid as the Nordic societies, and specifically the Swedish ones. So I've seen that firsthand, how people are just completely eradicated in the media, one of these softest attacks, as you said. So for sure, yeah.
What has the Swedish response to the Snowden revelations been? How do you think the Swedish people have taken that?
I think it's a certain level of naivety there. I mean, I enjoy what's being said there, and it's something that's kind of obvious. It's like one of those Doe situations, you know, when he starts, I mean, it's like the whole scenario is like, this is what it's all been about, the massive funds going up to Utah, to the, was it Bluffdale, the huge data center stored there for data mining and everything else. It's like, this is what the whole organization was set up to do. So when someone speaks out about it in this way, it's like, yeah, this is what the American people have inadvertently been paying for, you know, a couple of years now. And so I was like, I was rather, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I was rather questioning the way that the information now also about this, about what Snowden revealed, how that is going to be used in a level two kind of scenario where, I mean, I've been seeing how they want to try to break down the trust for the U.S. government as well. And I think that this plays very much into it. I'm not saying people should have trust for the U.S. government, but I'm saying it's, again, to create that division between the people and the state or the government and create that level of conflict and create that level where you start to erode the sense of the nation state and everything else, which plays into the bigger, you know, global one world government thing. But in terms of Sweden, I think, again, they've been way too naive without questioning really the background to the information of why they perceived it in this way, because we've had similar programs running in Sweden for, I mean, years before this was revealed about NSA. We were one of the first countries that had electronic spying and targeting people who were of, you know, politically dissenting groups and such. So that but they're more interested in it because it's on the American side. But when it occurs back home, they kind of fall, you know, have a blind eye to it, and it's not really that theatrical and interesting. So that's a shame.
Forty, everybody's afraid.
Yeah.
Exactly. But sometimes you feel that nobody's afraid as much as the leadership, and you know, which gets us back to, I think, one of the key things I'm hoping to learn more about at the conference, which is what in the world is the leadership so afraid of? And, you know, because what we're watching globally is, to me, there are two possible explanations. One is it's an invasion. The other is, you know, you're talking about people who are very, very afraid. So, you know, this is a very risk-averse kind of response. Well, anything else you'd like to say about the conference and your role in hosting it?
Well, again, I just hope I can do a good job facilitating you guys, and it's going to be a lot of fun, of course. I hope that everyone who wants to be there, and if they can't be there, of course, there's available streaming tickets online, basically. It's June 28th to the 29th in San Mateo, California, in the U.S. of A, of course. And, I hope a lot of people can show up, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's always great to get together with people and all different minds, and then having the Q&A sections and everything else. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's the first time I'm hosting a conference like this as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun for me. So it's going to be great seeing you, all of you guys there.
So for everyone who is not from California, just to remind you, San Mateo is Silicon Valley, south of San Francisco. So we'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a lovely area and a lovely time to be there. Before we close down as well, if you could describe Red Ice Creations and Radio and tell us a little bit more about how to find you on the web and access your work, because I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Thank you, Catherine. Certainly, the website's redicecreations.com. That's like R-E-D-I-C-E, redicecreations.com. That's the main website. And we have news updated frequently, almost every day. We do three radio shows per week. And people can tune in right there on the website. They can subscribe through the feeds that we have, RSS feeds. We are also available on iTunes and Stitcher and a number of places. We have all the social media buttons and everything else, so people can connect with us there on the website. And then we do have a members website as well, where people can sign up if they want to hear the full broadcast and all the archived shows. We have over a year of shows available for free on redicecreations.com. But then if they want to hear some of the extra stuff and get access to some of our videos and films and everything else, redicemembers.com is a website for that. And we go all over the place. We cover tons of different types of topics, and people might be confused and think that, what is this, you know, but we really just have a...
No, something, reality has been fractured, and we've all been put in little boxes and little niches, and you're trying to integrate, which means you've got to collect up reality from all the different pieces and bring it back together again. So I don't think you're all over the place at all. I think you're going, you know, you're trying to, what is it, navigate the ocean of uncertainty and bring it back together for us into something that's a little bit more coherent. So I would say you're a coherency-seeking machine.
Thank you. Well, again, it's a very concerted effort to just try to, cover as many of different topics that is out in the alternative as well, as a way, as a measure to just investigate them. Because we say this often on the program, it's not just the fact that we bring people on just to, you know, promote every issue and that we're for and pro and believe in everything that's being said. Far from it. This is a quest to try to get closer to what the kind of material that, you know, the researchers and authors and filmmakers and everything else that we talk with on the program, a way to just dive into it deeper, and hopefully we can ask those questions that, you know, the audience would ask as well, so that they can get a little bit closer to the material and get a chance to, it's like an open source investigation. Nothing is set in stone, nothing is decided. This is just, it's happening right there, and people can take advantage of that process as we question and dive into things. I mean, I've walked away from other shows, for example, and just had a 180 and a completely different attitude towards a certain topic as I was going into it. And that means, wow, I've actually learned a lot from doing that show. And that's what it's all about, like learning whatever direction it takes you. And that's what it's all about.
Okay, well, it's been wonderful having you on the Solari Report, Enric. You have a wonderful day, and I will see you in San Mateo on hopefully June 27th, okay?
Excellent. Thank you so much, Catherine. Great to be with you. Thank you.